Are you a retail or institutional investor interested in Bitcoin mining companies? The Miner Mag brings you free data and analysis from all major NASDAQ-listed Bitcoin mining operations to know who stands out. Check out visualized metrics and data-dependent stories at theminermag.com.
You know, when the energy price doubles next May, when the halving happens, and it will double overnight because you have, you know, the same amount of energy trying to find half the amount of Bitcoin. You know, if you're paying an average of, say, 11,000-12,000 now, that's going to be 24,000. If Bitcoin's not over 24,000, you don't mine. You can't mine.
Yeah.
I don't care if it's like, this is only the energy cost. If Bitcoin would need to be significantly higher than 24,000 next year for most of the miners, because they're operating about 12. Terawolf can mine at 6,200. So if it doubles for them, that's 12,400. They're still making probably at 24,000, 25,000 Bitcoin, they're still making a 50% margin.
Yeah.
And Cypher are in the same boat as Terawolf. And Riot, if they maintain their credits and only get energy when it's at a reasonable price, by curtailing long periods of time when it's high, they'll also manage. But some of the other ones, I mean, Hut 8 will just have to just switch off. You know, they've got an aging fleet, and whatever the new company, you know, it might be in a better position then, but the 2.5, 2.6 exahash that they've got is just not bringing in very much margin at all. And they've got to pay wages, professional fees, all these costs. I mean, they're working at a massive negative at the moment. But as long as the energy price is lower than the Bitcoin price, you're still viable to mine, because you are making a contract. If you don't mine, you still have to pay the wages. So if you mine, and say, for instance, your energy cost is 24,000, the Bitcoin price is 26,000, you make 2,000 mark. You have 2,000 going towards your costs, whereas if you didn't do anything, you still have to pay those other costs and you have no revenue. Do you get that?
Definitely.
You're aiming to provide a contribution to other costs than your energy costs.
Yeah,
it's marginal costing. You know, if you can't meet the energy costs, you switch off the machines. That's an absolute given, because you don't know what's going to happen. The Bitcoin price, you know, so it's saying, yeah, I'll keep mining at maximum output because I know the Bitcoin price sometime in the future is going to go up and I'll benefit then. Well, we saw in 2022 that didn't happen. And you know, this in June last year was the first month we saw the miners sell absolutely everything. You know, the likes of Bitfarms and Argo were selling not just one or two Bitcoin a month, they were selling thousands a month just to sort of stay afloat. And we're seeing this month, you know, every miner selling Bitcoin. Nobody's managing to sort of like, you know, lightly hodled like they did before.
Yeah.
Because they now realize the strategy sort of changed. You can't maintain that hodl, because you have to pay for things. You have to pay for energy. You have to pay for stuff. You have to pay for, you know, professional fees, legal fees, pay for travel and subsistence. All these miners go to all these conferences all around the world. They have to pay for it. It doesn't matter if they're going on a private jet like Core Scientific, or they're going, you know, economy class. I don't think anybody's going economy class. They'll be going, like, you know, business class, I would imagine, to all these locations. But it adds up. You know, if you send a team down to Miami, or send a team to London, or send a team to Dubai for the conferences, you're going to spend money. And if you look at some of these companies, what they spend on travel and subsistence for these type of events, it's tens to hundreds of thousands a year. So you have to have
money.
You have to have sufficient margin to pay for all these costs.
Yeah. And on top of that, some of these things, like the energy contracts, are actually locked in stone, right? Like, you have to
make the purchases. They're not locked in stone, Will. This is what I thought. You know, when you say, when you interview Jason again, they've got a fixed PPA, right? It's not fixed PPA. It's not a fixed contract price, because they still have to curtail. You know, prices are fluctuating,
and
they have to curtail. They have to sort of like, it's like margin calls on the energy prices. You know, they have to sort of really manage it on a sort of like, you know, literally a minute by minute basis as to whether it's actually profitable to do. And yes, they get some benefits if they curtail, they get some, you know, they get either, they can either get money for selling energy back to the grid, or they get money for curtailing and not utilizing energy. So there's two types of money they can receive. But if you say to Jason, have you got a fixed contract at 4 cents a kilowatt hour for the next 10 years? He will say, absolutely not.
Definitely. But they do have to make a purchase of energy at some point in many cases, depending on the model. Like,
yeah, they're in a better position than other miners in Texas because they have got a PPA, and they've had to use a lot of capital to get that PPA.
Yeah.
And we're hearing now Galaxy did the same at Helios. They've got a PPA in place already there. And Argo have got to something like a 5 to 5.5 cent all-in price for their hosting and electric cost, which actually is a couple of cents cheaper than MaraPay. So I was sort of half expecting Argo to get, you know, taken to the clean. You know, they're in no position to determine what happens, but it looks like they've got a reasonably good rate. And on their earnings call, it's sort of like it came out at 5 to 5.5 cents. So that to me sounded quite good rate.
Yeah.
Yes, they haven't got the production yet to sort of really make a dent into the interest payments that they have to make each month. And they're still having to find, you know, probably £1 million in interest, $1 million in interest each month just to cover their interest payments with Galaxy. So that's going to be interesting come the end of this year when they've got no runway left to sort of like manage. They've got some cash, but I think it was like 12 months from January this year. So
yeah, let's dive into some of these more specific miners. So I'll pull up the chart. These are self-mining updates for May. Anthony, thank you again for joining us today. We're going to go through the May monthly updates from a few different public miners that have made their information available. If you're a public miner who listens to this show and you want to have your information displayed in here, give us an email at media@compassmining.io or give us a DM online. We can talk with you. There's a lot of information here, so we don't always get everybody on the sheet because, again, it's a lot of information. But today we'll just go through them. Any place that you particularly want to start? I mean, sort of like the top 4 or 5 miners the same.
We could start with Marathon Digital for, you know, achieving 1,245 Bitcoins. So they breached 1,000 Bitcoin for the first time in their mining history. It wasn't the highest amount by a public miner. I mean, Core Scientific actually produced just over 1,300 Bitcoin. But I haven't included them in my tables as they're still going through the chapter 11 at the moment. And hopefully we'll see some signs of them coming out of that in the next month or two. I think September's is a month I've heard that potentially get some more updates of where we are with Core Scientific. So hopefully we can ride. But they produce a significant amount of Bitcoin. All the miners produced literally more Bitcoin in May than they did in April, even though the difficulty increased during the month, mainly because of the transaction fees. So, you know, it was a great month for miners. We will see a drop off in June because the amount of rewards and transaction fees that are coming through with the Bitcoin mined this month is nowhere near what it was in that first sort of 9-10 days of May. And that itself was probably about 20% of the Bitcoin reward was down to these transaction fees linked to the ordinals, which had a really good period in that early part of May. Other miners that did really well, Iris Energy, they achieved their 5.5 exahash in literally 12 weeks from announcing, when they were back just under 2 exahash. So they made a great strive to get that in the time frame that they stated as well. So they achieved what they said they were doing. They've even gone further than that now, and I think they've got they're now completing the second facility at Childress, which is another 20 megawatt facility. And once they fill that with miners, that'll get them over sort of like 6.5 exahash. So from a mine perspective, Iris Energy sort of jumped up the table and were you know, the fourth biggest producers in my tables for the month of May. So they overtook quite a few of the other miners who've generally been putting up good returns, like Bitfarms, like Hive, like Hut. your top three, you know, Marathon were above and beyond in my tables, followed by Riot and Sight and Clean Spark had another good month as well. Increasing their daily rate by, you know, 12%. But if you look at Iris Energy, their daily rate for the month of May increased by 54%. So, you know, amazing jump. And, you know, again, you know, did exactly what they said. There's been quite a bit of social media interaction about Iris recently with regards to the current position with NYDIG. And so at the moment, obviously looking into the two SPVs that Iris used to purchase the miners originally, and then literally when they defaulted on the loans back at the end of 2022, those miners were handed back to NYDIG. And there's been trying to be some now clarification by the likes of PwC as to what was part of the SPV. Was it just the miners, or what about the Bitcoin mine during that period? So there's still waiting for some resolution on that issue there, because we are looking at, you know, over £100 million of debt was collateralized by the miners, which at that point in time had a value of about £65 million. And so we're still waiting to see the final piece come out from that there. It could take a while to come out, but in effect, it hasn't really affected the share prices of Iris Energy. So, you know, maybe they're not in as bad a position as some people have stated already, or whether there's just not enough enough news out there to make a formal decision on this, but hasn't really affected the share price. All the miners have sort of been dropping lately, with the Bitcoin price coming down to sort of 26,000 from its sort of like highs of 31,000 a month ago. So, but yeah, a great month for miners. I think all the miners actually mined more than were expected, and that's with difficulty going up. So a good month. TerraWolf, again, increasing the hash rate. They increased their daily rate by 34%, and they're on track to get to that sort of that magic 5 exahash imminently. I spoke with the team at TerraWolf last week, and you know, sort of asked for a sort of time frame, but you know, we're maybe by the end of June see that magic 5 exahash figure for them. So it looks like 5 exahash is the sort of is where most of the miners are trying to get to. Most of these, you know, mid-tier miners that's the target. We've already seen the likes of Bitfarms achieve that. We've seen Iris Energy achieve that. We've seen CleanSpark achieve that this year. Cypher went over 5 exahash. Now it's, you know, 6 exahash. So TerraWolf will probably join that group of miners in the next week or so. And the great thing about TerraWolf is the cost of energy supporting the Bitcoin mining. I mean, you know, along with Cypher, those two mining companies are achieving 63 and 62% margins for the first quarter of 2023. And if we look at the May update by TerraWolf, their margin in May was actually 77%, which is the sort of margins that the miners were sort of achieving in 2021 when we had the Bitcoin bull run up to sort of 69,000. So if you consider most of the miners are achieving an average of about 45 to 50%, TerraWolf were achieving 77% in May. Iris Energy, they also put their electricity costs in their May update, and they do every month anyway. And they've increased from a 49% in Q1 to 55% in May. So again, a good marginal rate. And you want to have a good marginal rate because, you know, we're about 10 or 11 months away now from the next Bitcoin halving. And what that means is overnight, your energy prices to mine a Bitcoin will effectively double. Because when the halving occurs, you know, we won't be mining 6.25 Bitcoin per block every 10 minutes. It'll be down to 3.125 Bitcoin. But the energy to mine that, if the global hash rate stays the same level, it will require twice the amount of energy to mine that Bitcoin. So if you're achieving a margin at the moment of 50%, that means you won't have a margin come the next halving. So all these miners are probably striving to get, you know, the best rates at the moment of electricity, be it through nuclear, hydro. We've got miners like Bit Digital just starting to look at Iceland and setting up facilities there in Iceland. So, you know, literally going around the world. We already spoke about Marathon Digital. Their next venture is in Abu Dhabi, where they've managed to secure good rates of energy prices there. And you'll see these miners start looking, you know, internationally now, around the world for that cheapest energy cost, because that's the most important thing. You know, yes, staff get paid, you've got salary costs, you've got professional fees, you've got legal fees, but the big cost that all the miners will have to pay is the energy costs. And every halving, that doubles. So, you know, we could be looking at, for an average miner at the moment, it's around about 11 or 12,000 per coin. Next May, that will be 22 to 24,000 as an average per coin. And if the Bitcoin prices at the moment is 26,000, that means most of these miners haven't got any additional revenue to really pay all their other costs. And their other costs are quite significant. You know, they're going to have to pay all these staff. I mean, right, I've got over 300 staff at Winstone. They're going to have to pay those salaries. There's legal fees, there's travel costs, there's training costs, there's professional fees. There's lots of other costs that they have to pay every day. And so, you know, it's not just a case of, let's just have a great, you know, we need a great margin to pay those costs. But May was a positive month for all mines.
Yeah, a few things stuck out to me. One, Marathon Digital. I'd be curious to see their May monthly mining revenues for 2022 versus right now, which, as you see in this chart here, is about $33 million, almost $34 million for May. That's a quite significant jump for a mining firm which was not mining Bitcoin in July of 2022 because of a bunch of unforeseen circumstances. So that's one thing that pops out. Two, TerraWolf. I feel like they've made a big push, especially on social media. They're popping up quite a bit. And I think they're sort of hitting that stride along with their production. So seeing them come up is awesome. Of course, you've noted like the nuclear power angle, the really great margin. The one thing I'd be curious about, shooting the question back to you, is the cost of debt. They are one of the miners with the highest amounts of debt in the books right now that was enabled them to like get to the position they're at right now, like many miners did over 21 and 2022. Curious about the interest payments on this debt and how that stacks into their cost of margin for mining Bitcoin.
They've got a great margin. I mean, they've got a five-year deal with a nuclear facility at 2 cents a kilowatt hour. Their sort of average cost of energy, so the average cost of energy that they were paying in May was 2.8 cents a kilowatt hour. And, you can compare that to other miners who've released their price by kilowatt hour. I think Marathon Digital, which includes a small hosting fee, but theirs is 7 to 7.5 cents a kilowatt hour. So, you know, that's nearly three times cheaper than the Marathon deal, or a third of the price there. Their interest payments are quite high, and they have to maintain interest payments. They're not required, they don't have to pay the capital amount back straight away. They can pay the capital amount at the end of the loan. So I did speak to Terrell about this because, you know, we've talked about debt in a number of the podcasts, and there's been a number of articles written on the debt side. And, you know, we know what happened with the likes of, you know, Argo Blockchain, and Core Scientific and Greenwich Mining and Bitfarms to a certain extent as well, who, you know, got to a debt position of 160 million and then managed to get that down to less than 20 million within the space of about 10 months. And, you know, whether we can see TerraWolf, once they get to their five and a half exahash, there'll be half a exahash of that is a hosting element. So they're going to have 5 exahash of self-mining. They're producing, you know, 8.8 million based on just under 4 exahash at the moment. So, you know, they could be looking at 10 million a month once they get the 5 exahash in place with a great margin. So I'm assuming that the interest payment will be covered. My concern will be is come the December 2024, when the debt's supposed to be repaid in full, and we're still looking at just over 100 million of debt. So it'll be interesting to see how they manage that. But one thing I will say is, you know, the finance director at Terrible is, or the chief finance officer is a highly respected individual in this community. And, you know, I've spoke to a lot of miners and, you know, they've stipulated, you know, the person they've got in place there now is exceptional. So, you know, I've got faith that he'll come up with a plan to do this. And he's already working on a plan of how to get that debt down over this next sort of 18 months. But from an operational point of view, you know, they're doing really well. So, you know, you can only do as good as you are mining at the moment, and they're doing that part really well. Great margins, so they'll be able to, you know, at least pay the interest and maybe some of the capital each month. We haven't heard of too much about what happens post 5.5 exahash. What's the next jump? I mean, you know, we're hearing from, you know, the likes of CleanSpark. Every week you seem to be hearing another target they're going to achieve. I mean, they bought another 12,500 S19 XP. So, you know, their original target of 16 exahash in 2023 is now 17.7 or 17.6 exahash as the new target. And that puts them sort of up there with Marathon Digital as two of the top miners. I mean, Marathon Digital at the moment have got 15.2 exahash with a further nearly 5 exahash plugged in waiting to be switched on. So they've got 20 exahash plugged in, but 4.8 of that is just waiting to be energized. So they'll get to 20 quickly. And, you know, they've been saying this target of 23.3 should happen by middle of 2023. Well, we're getting close to that middle now. I think we've got a couple of weeks left before we hit the middle of 2023. So I'm hoping their next update will shine some light on either achieving that target or some clear direction as to when that will be achieved. But CleanSpark, they're starting to get their deliveries through now of miners from orders this year. So the big orders in February, and then the really big order of the 45,000 S19 XPs. And then the further order, they'll start getting those in by September. And we'll see their hash rate more than double in the space of the next few months. So they're doing really well to get to that target. And it looks like they'll exceed what their expectation was for 2023.
Definitely. One other thing I wanted to bring up was the ordinal stuff and then the energy curtailment payments that we're already seeing to trickle in. So I sort of put these two together, even though they're completely different, obviously, like in terms of the end product, but they do turn into cash on the balance sheet for these miners as extraneous services that miners can provide. So for ordinals, I think the DMG team is probably the lead miner right now out there in terms of like a self miner. We have a podcast coming out with them, or by the time this is out, that podcast will already be out. So if you haven't taken a look at that, do so. DMG team is great. Thank them again for their time. So we'll see like that popping up in the balance sheet a little bit more. Of course, it'll pale in comparison to the energy credits some of these miners are going to get. The one thing of note for me was Riot put in, I believe, something around $2.3 or $2.4 million worth of energy credits for the month of May.
Yeah, I mean, you know, in terms of, you know, operational performance for May, Riot are obviously still curtailing quite a lot. The time they're not operating at their maximum at the moment because they have these two facilities. The immersion facilities are still being repaired. One of them should be imminently coming online. The second facility is going to take 2 or 3 months longer. But those two facilities have been out all year, so that's affected them considerably. But the credits they've received, the 2.3 million credit they received in May. I don't include that as part of their mining, but you know, if I was to do that, that would add, you know, again, another significant amount of Bitcoin equivalency mined. But I do put it in the comments. I do put it in the article, the fact that they achieved that. But you know, you consider, you know, CleanSpark with 2/3 of the hash rate are getting close to what Riot achieved as a whole. So there is some, you know, and I've got a chat this week with Jason, so I might, you know, ask if delve into that a little bit more as to, you know, the impact of the curtailment versus the credits, and you know, just understand that a little bit more as to, you know, is it a case of return investment. I mean, end of the day, if you're switching off power and you're getting paid 2.3 million, then you could argue there's no margin on that. If you equate it to Bitcoin, there's no margin on that Bitcoin. So all the Bitcoin we see on my table there is all mined at a margin. So you're having to pay electricity to mine that. Whereas, you know, if say Riot's margin is 58%, so you could effectively say if you can mine, and I don't know what the number is, say another 200 Bitcoin, another 100 Bitcoin for that 2.3 million. Effectively, would that be 200 Bitcoin because there's no margin attached to it? You know, so then it starts putting them into actually for 10.5 exahash off operational hash rate, and you're producing sort of, you know, 800-900 Bitcoin. That's quite a good return. So I'll have a delve in with that. With it's on my list of things to discuss with Jason this week, and I'll get that put into our next update as to how they go about determining how they can do that. But you know, he's quite keen to keep that in the updates there, and it gives, you know, shareholders and investors an understanding of what, you know, there's not just about we've mined, you know, 676 Bitcoin. We also got 2.3 million as a credit as well, which will come off their energy cost. So it's, you know, it's a good position to be in. And we know there are other miners now that have got some PPA agreements in Texas. So we might start seeing other miners disclose what they're receiving as well. So interesting times.
Yeah, for the Riot thing, one last point. They said in their note that they're going to be putting the data for energy credits for every month now going forward, if it's over $1 million. So yeah. I think that sort of bleeds into the thesis that we've been talking about. A lot of miners have, where you're going to have basically a two-part mining model in the future. It's going to be stranded, extremely cheap energy, and then like these power block miners, which is what I kind of call them. So like miners that sit on just grid jurisdictions where oftentimes in the future, they're probably going to be making more from energy credits than necessarily mining Bitcoin. If we continue to see hash prices as it is. I want to kind of go over to another topic, which we've talked about it in part, but we kind of danced around the subject. And it's just an idea I've been working on, which is that there's been some of these miners who sort of waited around for the bear market to spring their trap and start growing. I think teams like BitDigital, Cipher Mining, DMG, a few others might fall into that. And then CleanSpark, I think, would probably be the most obvious example, maybe Iris Energy now. The difference here between, there is a difference between some of these miners that I just laid out though, and that would be like the capital that they can pull. So you'd put like CleanSpark, Iris Energy, Cipher Mining on one side, right? Where they waited for a bear market to start buying assets, or at least that's how the timeline did break out in the end. And now they've really started growing quite aggressively, right? Where Cipher Mining deployed like 5x a hash within a matter of months. Iris Energy deployed 5x a hash within 1 month. CleanSpark, every day we see a new headline for them buying 10,000, 20,000 XPs. But then you have some of these other miners that also start growing during the bear market, but they're putting on, you know, 1x a hash here and there. And that would be sort of like your DMGs or your BitDigitals and maybe a few others. I wonder if you had any thoughts on that. To me, it just seems to be about like awareness of these brands and maybe like the strategy behind these different miners. Like, again, we're not disparaging any strategy here. But I am noticing like a difference between some of these bear market miners who are really, you know, diving into the thick of it and trying to grow during this bear market.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a good point. I mean, you know, you've alluded to the miners that have took real advantage of the low prices in miners, and you can I'd add Bitfarms to that as well. They've been buying miners cheap since they managed to get the debt down. And they're raising their end of year target as well, I think closer to 7x a hash. So they'll be at 6 quite quickly. They're already putting miners into Argentina as we speak. With regards to DMG and the likes of, you know, Hive, I'd say in that bracket, BitDigital. I spoke with Samir this last week actually and asked him about, you know, the growth side. They're acting a bit more cautiously. So, you know, DMG and BitDigital, zero debt on the balance sheet. So they don't go out there. I mean, we've seen, you know, we use Argo as an example. Argo went out there and tried to, you know, get their hash rate up significantly, but were paying top dollar to buy the machine. So, you know, when they were buying machines in 2021 at, I think, $83 to $84 a terahash, And then you see the likes of CleanSpark, you know, even last month we're paying $23 a terahash for S19 XPs. You know, that's a significant reduction in price now. And some of these miners were burnt. So, you know, Argo was burnt in that period there. Stronghold Mining was burnt. Greenwich was burnt. You know, raising debt to buy machines when they're really high price. And I think, you know, DMG, I spoke to Sheldon. I think they looked at this and thought, you know, that's not sustainable. You know, they've done it as a more managed. They wait and look for opportunities to grow. DMG have got a target of 2 exahash this year. I'm going to say it's probably, you know, maybe unlikely they'll get that too, but they have put a target in place to try and double what they had at the end of 2021, which was their target for 2022 was one exahash, and they achieved, you know, they got to within about 92% of that target. But even if you look at their hash rate now, it's only the operational hash rate for May was down because of a couple of issues, but all plugged in, they're about 1 exahash at the moment. So, and they're adding about 45 petahash a month when deliveries come through. So you've got about 6, maybe 7 months of deliveries to come through, and that gets them probably closer to 1.5 exahash if they can maintain that. Hive, you know, they've been stuck around this sort of like 2.5-3 exahash now for about 18 months. You know, they were sort of all in on the Ethereum mining, and you know, and had, you know, bought significant amount of GPUs. They're starting to articulate what's happening with the GPUs and going into this, probably some of the same ventures that Hut 8 have been actively moving into, because yes, you can use the GPUs to mine Bitcoin, but you just don't get, you know, any significant hash rate from these thousands and thousands of machines. And they're not really geared up to, you know, to do the hash rate, but you can convert them, and they can mine. It's just that you know, you're getting a fraction. But they've articulated that they've got some orders coming through, and I think their target to achieve within the next 12 months. So it's not the end of 2023. So we're talking middle of 2024. So probably by the time of the halving, they've got a target, I think, about 6 exahash. So they've been quite cautious. But yeah, as I say, bit digital. Samir, you know, they've got more machines than their operational hash rate suggests. So they've got an active number of machines of about 12,000, but they've got some like 35,000 machines in total. So, but again, they're just waiting for the right time to move those machines and to grow, you know, further hash rate. And I didn't get an indication of how many targets were for the end of the year. But as I say, you know, there's not many mining companies have got a balance sheet as strong as Bit Digital. It's a very strong balance sheet, absolutely no debt whatsoever. But at 1.2 exahash and 100, just over 100 Bitcoin every month, and bear in mind, May's a good month, so we might be down to, you know, 100 Bitcoin, maybe slightly under 100 for June, because it's only a 30-day month. It's not a great deal of revenue. So, you know, some of these miners are going to struggle. DigiHost, I put in that bracket as well, you know, very slowly bringing in orders. And you just wonder what happens come the halving when there's even less Bitcoin to mine. And historically, the Bitcoin price hasn't always increased at the halving. You know, if you look at the price by period, it's sometimes taken 4 or 5 months before we've seen a sort of a bounce in the Bitcoin price. So it's not like these miners should be thinking May next year we'll have a halving, but the Bitcoin price will compensate that. It doesn't always compensate. So I'm thinking you've got some miners who are really cautious, and you've got some miners that are taking advantage of the market at the moment and diluting, using their ATMs, their at-the-market offerings. Nobody seems to be going out there as much and doing a dilution offering like some of the miners did in 2021. And, you know, as soon as you mention dilution to the market, your share price will reduce by that percentage of dilution overnight. It's straight away, the market reacts to that. But with an ATM offering, you don't find out for about 5 months as to how many shares these companies have been selling. So, you know, I've articulated, you know, Riot, Marathon Digital, CleanSpark, those three miners diluted significant amounts in 2022-23. You know, we're talking 40, 50, 60% of dilution for those three miners. And yes, their hash rate's grown, but the share price didn't really take account of all that dilution. So it proved the ATM was the best method. I think more miners, I've seen a lot more miners putting through proposals for their AGMs, whereby they're looking at the dilution route going in, you know, now for the rest of 2023 and 2024, to give them an opportunity, should mining prices stay the way they are at the moment, to buy more miners, update what they've got, and grow hash rate at the same time. Because some of these miners will need to replace machines. It's not just about building hash rate, it's about replacing miners that are not as profitable anymore. Hut 8 have got an aging number of miners in there, so that they'll need to not only grow but to update. I saw an article which listed miner by efficiency, and this is efficiency by joules per terahash. And Marathon and CleanSpot, because of the nature of their machines, they've got all brand new S19s, most of which are XPs. They're operating sort of like 24 joules per terahash and 26 joules per terahash respectively. But then at the other end of the scale, you've got Hut, which are operating at 38 joules per terahash. I think Bitfarms is around about that as well. So they're constantly informing us that they're buying miners, not just to grow hash rate, but to replace hash rate that's operating at the moment. And so miners will have to start also thinking about that position as well. And I think, the likes of, having spoke to Sheldon at DMG, some of these miners are a bit more cautious. They'll do it slowly, slowly. And shareholders can sort of like, jump up and down and say, well, I want them to grow double overnight. It doesn't always work out that way. And some of these miners have really struggled trying to do that. And so, you have to probably, pat some of these miners on the back who took a bit more of a cautious route through what we're seeing at the moment. But it's always nice to see a miner come out with a strong update saying we've just bought 10,000 new US-19 miners, and like you say, we've articulated the ones that have done that. But I'm also, wanting to make sure that there's an ability to get a return for investment on those as well. It's not just going out to the market and saying, we'll do this, because it's not just buying miners. You've got to have the facilities. You've got to have the right energy price. Energy price is key to this. But yeah, it's a good point. And there is a sort of like, there are two or three different strategies that have been adopted by miners at the moment.
Yeah, again, that's disparaging any strategy, because there's lots of different strategies. I've heard of people just go for exahash goals, and then after that, they just want to keep that exahash goal and like upgrade their hardware, keep it rolling. Some people just have like an energy goal. Just depends on like what your strategy is. But I have noticed that there is a big branding issue with mining stocks, particularly where the legacy ones seem to have more liquidity and market cap, and some of the other ones are coming up, very strong contenders, are struggling in terms of price valuation sometimes because they just don't have that public consciousness yet. And I imagine that even some of the smaller guys that maybe not even on NASDAQ, but Canadian exchanges, are in even worse position. But let's leave that there. You reminded me of something else that we should talk about, which is the Texas summer. So you're talking about the halving and how the halving is coming up, when we should be worried about that. Well, something else is knocking on our door right now, and that is Texas heat. So we have a tweet here from our friend Doug Lewin, who runs, is the president at Stoke Energy, also has a great podcast and newsletter talking about all things Texas energy. Definitely go check him out on Twitter or check out his blog. We've had him on the show before back in December, and he's sort of just given some market commentary on the energy market in Texas. We wrote about this 2 or 3 weeks ago, a mining memo, our newsletter for this podcast, talking about how in Texas they're expecting the highest generation of energy ever, but also the highest demand ever this summer. And it looks like right about this week, we're expected to have a record in terms of demand. And that record is coming a few months earlier than expected, a few weeks, I should say, mid-June, when they're expecting most of the heat to hit in late July to early August. Why does this matter for mining? Well, there's about 1.2 plus or minus a gigawatt of demand on the Texas grid from Bitcoin miners. And most of this is enrolled in the ERCOT demand response program, so they are able to turn off. But of course, this becomes a political issue. It becomes a story for Bitcoin miners who are learning how to use demand response systems. And also, it becomes a money question, right? Because if you are able to turn off in time, well, you've made a lot of money and it becomes another leg of revenue. So curious if you have any thoughts on this. I think most of these miners have a presence in Texas, or a lot of them do. And I'd be curious to see if maybe by the end of the summer, we can look at Texas miners and sort of chart out how their stock prices did, or how interest in those stock prices did versus the relative ability to mine well in Texas during a summer. I mean, if they're turned off a lot, I wonder if the mining stock goes down or not, or if retail buyers, these stocks are like knowledgeable of this energy market.
Yeah, it's a great point. I mean, you know, when we heard the likes of, you know, Riot moving into Whinstone, and, you know, Argo buying or building their, you know, flagship facility at Helios, you know, now owned by Galaxy Digital. There was so much positive news about Bitcoin miners moving into Texas that people weren't really assessing the spikes in demand. And, you know, people talk about the high demand in the cold weather months, but equally the high demand in the warm weather months. And it's sort of like, you know, you could argue these miners are curtailing energy every month of the year. So it does make you wonder whether it was worth some of these miners putting all their eggs in one basket. I mean, Riot are building their second site, you know, literally 2-hour drive away from Whinstone. And, you know, they're going to have the same issues of energy at the new site than they're having at the moment. So, you know, lots of curtailment. You know, they were affected by the cold weather in 2022, which damaged some of their immersion buildings, and that's, you know, that's taken the best part of 6 to 9 months to rectify. That's a lot of time for, you know, 2 exahash of mining offline for, you know, for that period of time. It's going to be interesting, and we probably do something to look at the, you know, the comparisons of, you know, TeraWulf will articulate, you know, they're not curtailing at the moment. You know, with the power they've got, they're just powering 24/7. So, you know, they're in a great position, and they sort of like, you know, look at that sort of like the Texas model and thinking, you know, maybe not model for them. And you're also seeing, we've also articulated about Marathon Digital looking abroad for the next ventures. You know, I mean, initially when I thought, you know, they're going into the Middle East, which is even warmer than Texas. You know, the temperatures there are even greater than Texas are in the summer. But when you consider the amount of energy used in the Middle East to keep, you know, temperatures cooler, and the ability to tap into that energy, there's a great amount of energy there, especially at night when the energy is, you know, is utilized about 25% is during the day. It looks like a great opportunity for Bitcoin miners to go in there and get great deals. And Marathon have jumped onto that. But I think we'll see this next year or so that miners will start looking at other areas than, you know, I don't think Texas will be the only, you know, state that they're all heading to. There was an avalanche of miners going in there. And, you know, I think there was even sort of at one point, it was like, they were stopping new miners from going in because it was like they'd already reached a certain level of power, and so it was going to have an effect on the grid itself. So miners are going to have to start thinking about other locations, and you know, going to places which are more have a sympathetic view to Bitcoin mining, because there's still a lot of places out there that are, you know, using the argument that it's not good for, you know, the economy or good for the environment, and not really understanding that much about Bitcoin mining. It's going to be interesting. I mean, you know, Riot, you know, they're all in Texas, and, you know, you look at their performance for the last 18 months compared to miners who are in other locations, and, you can understand then that there's a gap in production. There's a significant gap in production. Yes, they're getting some energy credits, and they got 21 million energy credits in 2022. So that was a significant amount. That was more in potential revenues than some of these other miners earned in a year. So, you know, it's good. But, you know, I think miners will start looking at other opportunities as well. I think Texas isn't the only place. I mean, you know, you're going to have these weather conditions every year. There's going to be, you know, spikes in cold weather, spikes in hot weather. And, you know, demand at those points in times will be high and miners will have to switch off. And so, you know, if you can get a business where miners are only literally switched on 12 hours a day, then the UAE model probably is a good model. Because, you know, the lack of usage at night. I think Fred articulated in one conference that, you know, it might be using 4 terabytes of energy during the day, but it's only 1 at night. So it's like literally 25% of the energy is used at night than used in the day. So it gives a great opportunity for people to go in there and use that excess energy, and great for Bitcoin mining. So I think there'd have to be, you know, more miners looking at those sorts of deals going forward.
No, I definitely agree with you. I want to close up and think about what the summer could bring and throw out some predictions. I have some for you, and then I'm going to throw it back to you and get some predictions. The first prediction I have is that there will be a major brownout or rolling blackout event in Texas, and Elizabeth Warren or another politician, probably Elizabeth Warren, will use that as a cry against Bitcoin miners. So I think that will happen by, let's say, the 1st of September, because we're 2 days away from the start of the summer here in the Northern Hemisphere. So I'm making predictions for the end of the summer. I think that one definitely occurs. Any predictions for the summer? It can be about anything, about miner production, growth of these miners. It doesn't have to be related to summer or necessarily anything like that.
Life on Mars?
Life on Mars could be fair as well.
Yeah, I was responding to a tweet this week, and somebody says it's like to happen. I said life on Mars is like to happen, but not in the foreseeable future. I don't know. I'm trying to think what our predictions were for the global hash rate at the end of the day. I think was it 375?
Yeah, we've already smashed through that. We're now,
aren't we? I think
we're getting close to 400 exahash.
400 now.
If not already past it.
With a lot of miners, if the Bitcoin price does stay flat, I can't see global hash rates continue to increase at the rate they've done, because, you know, we've already said in this discussion that the profitability of some of the miners out there, you know, if you break down the types of miners that make up that 400 exahash on the global hash rate, they won't all be XP miners. There'll be some miners on there that, you know, people probably still use X9s, you know, S17s, not as profitable as the latest generation S19 miners or equivalents. I still think probably, you know, maybe 400, 425 by the end of the year is my prediction for the global hash rate. Only because we've already smashed through the target we set 6 months ago. But I don't foresee it keeping us, unless Bitcoin price rises dramatically. That will then give all miners opportunities just to get things added to the added online and get you know get the hash rate going and can profit that way. But at $26,000 a Bitcoin at the moment, you know, we talked about gross margin. Gross margin isn't total cost of mining a Bitcoin. And total cost of mining Bitcoin for I would say half the miners in that table is more than the Bitcoin price. So some miners are actually mining effectively at a loss at the moment in terms of cash costs. And all miners are mining at a loss in terms of quarterly reporting. So we're not really seeing miners, you know, in quarter one, there was only one miner that made a profit, and actually Hut 8 had a one-off line, which was an increase in the value of Bitcoin. Bitcoin had increased in quarter one, and the way they account is they're allowed to include the increases in valuation, whereas GAAP doesn't let you do that at the moment. The rules are changing. And so they had this like over £100 million increase in valuation of their HODL, which meant in the quarter they were actually profitable. But if you take out the one-offs and use adjusted EBITDA, they made a loss just like most of the other miners. So it is it's still challenging times at the moment. And these are, you know, these miners that I put in my tables, you know, are some of the biggest miners out there. You know, that's, they only represent sort of 20-25% of the total hash rate. So there's another, you know, a lot of miners out there might not be mining as efficiently as these miners. So I can't see that the hash rate sort of getting to 500 if the Bitcoin price stays as it is. But I've been proven wrong this year already, so, you know, could be wrong again.
Definitely. Okay, one other idea. I think I see, I'm not sure how this hash rate is deployed, but I think that Bitmain will start deploying more hash rate. And I think it's either going to go through BitFuFu or another one of its entities. So I think by at least the end of this year, we see another top 10 miner emerge out of our current list and possibly push out somebody else. So those are my two predictions.
Oh, I mean, we haven't even mentioned Bitdeer. Bitdeer are a top 10 miner.
Yes.
They're not in there. You know, that I'll start looking more into Bitdeer this next week or so. And maybe, you know, they've had about 3 months now in the mining sphere. So maybe do something on Bitdeer to get that out there and highlight what they've done so far. But they're the one that's going quite quickly. Their market, I think if you look at the Bitdeer price on Friday, the share price went up 50% on Friday.
It fell 50%?
Went up.
Oh, it went up.
Went up 50%.
That's good for them.
Great for them, because the market cap goes up 50% as well. So they've got a market cap, you know, literally close to $1 billion now.
Yeah. No, next cycle, definitely
take away the Marathon Digital and Riot's, because they're still the, you know, US market favorites. You know, if you look at CleanSpark, which has you know, that will have a hash rate 17.5 exahash by sort of end of September, October. You know, their market cap at the moment is about 400 million. And Bitdeer do more than just self-mining. So, I don't want to do them a disservice, but I think their self-mining is about 4 exahash, something like that.
Yeah, it's mostly a hosting company at this point.
It's a big hosting company, but we, you know, Riot Blockchain is a big hosting company. They, you know, they host Rovium, and that's, I think they host about 3 exahash of their fleet. So, but yeah, the there are some changes. I mean, Iris Energy broke into that top 10 in May, and you know, unless something really changes that, they'll stay in that top 10 now. You know, they've never had a bad month of production in the last 18 months since I've been reporting on them. So, you know, you look at the month, but, you know, the production by year, and it's still those same four miners who seem to be so consistent. You can literally, you know, it's a fraction of a percent between all four of them. They're so competitive, if you want to put that word, or they're just so efficient at getting the most Bitcoin from their hash rate. But there'll be other miners that break in. You know, with mining prices, with Bitcoin mining prices at the moment, I think it's a great barrier to get in. You know, as long as you can get the energy price is key. If you can get good energy, stranded energy, and utilize that, then it leaves the door open.
One last thought on this, my last prediction. I think Core Scientific will be out of bankruptcy by end of the summer, or at least be signaling that they're out of bankruptcy.
I would say nearly 100% certain. Yeah. They'll come out in September probably. I think, you know, if they've got, it looks like they've got the right management team in place now. I'm hearing good things from, you know, the CEO they've got in place there, and they've still been able to go out there and you know, mine the most Bitcoin of all the listed miners. You know, they've got a market cap of less than half of the Bitdigital market cap at the moment, because they've got, you know, this debt that they need to sort through. And I think what I'm hearing is that, you know, a lot of the creditors have come to some sort of an agreement, and maybe one or two that are still sort of trying to finalize things. But I'm hearing positive things. I'm even hearing them, you know, there might be machine purchases in line and things like that. So that sounds like, you know, potentially, you know, looking to even grow hash rate.
Yeah. The one question I have about it, maybe you have a thought, is what does this look like for retail or other buyers with their shares that were just absolutely clobbered?
That's the unknown. It really depends on what the deal that comes out with. I mean, when they first went into Chapter 11, you know, there was a lot of posts on social media saying that, you know, the retail would only represent 3% of the value of the company because the creditors will take everything. Until we know more, I couldn't even predict what that looks like. But they have been mining, you know, over 1,000 Bitcoin every month since they've been in Chapter 11. They've reduced their hosting. So that some of these miners don't make a profit out of hosting or haven't made a profit out of hosting. I don't want to be disingenuous or something, because we are seeing energy prices start to come down in areas and that helps. But where you've got issues with hosting, and when the energy prices spiked and there was some uncertainty as to whether companies had fixed rates or whether the increase in price was passed on to the miner, it caused a lot of issues. And, you know, and I think that's probably one of the reasons why Core Scientific had to go into Chapter 11, is because they had a significant amount of hosting and they were having to try and pass on the cost. And I think they had fixed contracts with some of their clients. So they're still hosting, I think it's about four and a half exahash, something like that. But it was probably more than double that when they were before Chapter 11. So they've probably handed over half their hosting. But as I say, I'm still hearing positive things in the industry about them. So let's hope they come through it, because it, you know, Chapter 11 doesn't mean bankruptcy. It means try to look at ways to resolve before you go into bankruptcy. You know, there'll be a number of options on the table, and bankruptcy is the last option. You know, so hopefully, they're discussing all the viable options. Then September might be the more update as to what's happening. But from a real perspective, I wouldn't even like to think what that looks like. You know, they might have to give, you know, a chunk of the company to creditors to sort of like, you know, as part of the deal, like, you know, so we'll see. That mean, you know, it could be more like a dilution of shares to pay back some of this debt. But hopefully they can learn from some of the, you know, the mistakes that, you know, happened before Chapter 11. And the same goes for a lot of these miners. You know, Bitfarms were able to turn around. You know, they could have entered Chapter 11 if they hadn't have steered the ship in a different direction quickly and literally, you know, were just selling things to get the debt down, you know. And they got rid of $140 million debt in 10 months. So, you know, whether Argo can do something like that, they've got about $80 million of debt on their balance sheet. They've got 12 months runway or 6-7 months runway left if they can do it as well. But I'd probably give Core Scientific a higher than average chance of coming through this. I think from what I'm hearing, I think it's all positive news at the moment.
Okay, that's our last prediction. Anthony, anything else for our listeners before we close out for the day?
No, I've got nothing. I'm working on a couple of things at the moment. All the quarter one numbers are in now for most of the miners now. So I'm currently doing some articles looking at comparisons there. I want to do something on Bitdeer next few weeks. I want to look at, you know, the involvement of artificial intelligence in the sector. And, you know, I've spoke to most of the CEOs and chief mining officers, got some feedback on what they are doing and what they're not doing. So I want to get something put out about that as well. So yeah, I've got a few interesting topics to talk about. And like I say, we'll keep asking the questions from some of the followers to see what they want to talk us to talk about in these sessions and get more feedback from them. But yeah, look forward to the next one.
Love it. Well, from all our listeners, from Anthony, I should say, I'm not going to say on behalf of the listeners, but thank you for listening to the show. Again, check out us, our newsletter, Mining Memo. You can check it out on the Compass Mining website, or you can just go check it out on our Twitter feed. There's some great info there, written form. If you don't like the audio version, check us out on YouTube as well. Give us a like, subscription helps other miners find this content. We'll see you guys again on this feed later in the week. Thanks. Bye.